You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, their ZDX is the most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast with me, Robbie Musto, and him, Robbie Earle, reacting to all the big stories as ever in England's Premier League. Now, it was match week 16, and at the end of this match week, we are going to see a new leader at the top of the Premier League, and that's Liverpool. We're going to get to all those major stories, of course, in this podcast, but it was a match week on the Saturday that coincided with another, our second fan fest of this season. It was held at Pier 17, South Street in New York City. And Robbie Earle, it's such a long day and a busy day, but I tell you what, it's got to be one of my most favourite things that we do for NBC covering the Premier League, to get together in this big old venue, a beautiful spot overlooking the skyline of Manhattan. And what a good day it was. It was a lot of great football, by the way, a lot of great goals, but just a lot of people there representing different clubs and providing a fantastic atmosphere.
I think it's spot on, mate. And one of the things for me that's great about the work we do and the opportunities we have is when we go to England, when you go to games, when you're at the stadiums, this is almost the next best thing, Rob.
Yeah.
To be in the fan fest with fans, interacting, getting emotional, understanding the game, biting your nails and getting great goals and sharing those moments. And the thing that stood out to me yesterday, and I know this was our biggest and most ambitious fan fest done so far of the three we've done, was just the range of football clubs who were there. You expect the big five, the big six, because you know they're well supported everywhere. But I've never seen so many Brighton fans outside of Brighton. I've never seen so many Bournemouth fans, Cardiff fans, Leicester fans. There was Leeds United fans. Leeds ain't even in the Premier League yet. I just thought it was amazing. And it was almost like every club wanted to be there and be represented. And that's what the Premier League is all about. It's about, you know, not just the big six. It's about everybody having a part.
I'll tell you as well, you know, just you talking about the diversity of clubs, just the diversity in general, Rob. Whichever way you want to go with that. I mean, there's young kids there knocking the ball around in the little football pitch area. Mm-hmm. You had the hardcore kind of expat fans that are all there fired up. They got their glass of beer and they're singing songs of the song with their teams. You got families. I mean, just the whole range of people. That's what I think is really, really cool, that it you know, thankfully, it doesn't get out of hand in any way. Mm-hmm. And it's a really nice vibe of some kind of cheering and singing, which kind of, you know, gets you going a little bit of banter between the two sets of fans. Absolutely. And the families and everything else. So I think it's a really nice mix. You know, we're lucky to work for NBC. They do such a great job of organizing it and making a really fun day. So I just, again, it's a long one. There's four game windows, you know, but it's marvelous to meet everybody and just to see everybody having a good time. And the growth, of course, of our sport in this country just continues to grow, mate.
Yeah, the takeaway I had, Rob, and I heard a soundbite from a fan who was asked what the day meant to him, and I thought the gentleman summed it up perfectly. He said, "This is football's version of Disneyland." and I thought, what a wonderful way to you know, we've all been a kid and gone to Disney and just been, you know, breathtaking by what's going on in the park. Yeah. I think for football people, this is the equivalent.
Yeah, and you're obviously the Mickey Mouse of the
I laid myself into that one, Minnie.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, mate, let's get cracking with the football. But just before we get into the games and some of the stories, we always like our listeners to go wherever they get their podcasts and to rate and review our show and tell us anything that they like about it, what they don't like about it, and what they want to hear more of, less of. And we're getting good ones. And the one we're going to read out this time, Rob, is from Petrelia Forge. Might have got that wrong, by the way, in the pronunciation. Sorry if I did. But it says this. Just started listening and loving all the Spurs talk. Obviously a big Spurs fan. Would love to hear a little more on the tactical side from two former pros. Open to hearing the personal opinions from both men. So, well, thanks very much for that review.
Yeah.
And again, this is so interesting for us. I mean, we can get into things a lot deeper. You know, we do try and balance it out a little bit. But in terms of that review, Rob, Let's go on to our first game, because I think we can just do that very kind of subject in terms of tactical situations. Mm. Chelsea 2, Manchester City 0. Wow. I mean, what a game of football it was. But it was interesting, Rob. In terms of tactical situation, let's just dive straight into where there's been a lot of talk about Chelsea over the last week or so. They lose a game. Mm-hmm. And everybody, I think a couple of losses in recent weeks, everybody's jumped on to the N'Golo Kante situation in midfield, and they can't play him out of his position, and Jorginho, you know, isn't defensively good enough to play in the centre. Well, just to make everybody clear, it was exactly the same system. In fact, the two systems of the two teams were the same, and yet this time they win the game 2-0. What do you think to that, Rob, in terms of N'Golo Kante? And you know, let's just reply to this review here. Tactically, what did you see in the game?
Yeah, well, it was interesting because we've been saying, we were one of the few people who were saying that we don't necessarily feel that Kante playing in that deep role is necessarily the answer in the way that the Sarri wants to play in the rhythm of the team. That there's a hybrid situation where the ball's on the opposite side, Kante comes narrows up and almost becomes a more of a firmer fixture too. When the ball's on his side, he goes up and he can go on and maybe get advanced in advanced positions, as the goal came at the weekend. And so it's interesting because people, the knee-jerk reaction and the sort of you know, tactics that people have, they always want them to be instant and like that to gratify what they're saying, when there's something in between for Chelsea. Listen, Jorginho maybe has to do better in the role that he's playing. Chelsea have to find other alternatives to playing through a player if he's been shut down and that avenue's not working. And we saw that against a Man City team who had more possession. So Kante wasn't probably as high up the pitch. But, you know, Chelsea stayed in the game, were well organised, were better disciplined, took the chances when they came along in the first half, because City were the better team in the first half and had way more possession, but Chelsea were a lot more solid and resilient, like the Chelsea we saw early in the season.
Yeah, I think what we discussed it, Rob, I think a couple of days ago about going into this game, like what you can see at Chelsea with that system 4-3-3, that it's very simple and easy and natural, happens all the time, for it to turn into a 4-5-1. So instead of having side-by-side midfield players, you've got, you know, you'll have your holding player, Jorginho, and then he's got two guys either side that are kind of close. You've got wide players filling in the wide spots. So it can be a very tight system. Now, against some of the stronger teams, in certain parts of games where maybe N'Golo Kante's gone forward and Kovacic has gone forward as well, yes, there might be some situations where, you know, you get caught out a little bit, where Jorginho's not as good athletically and defensively, and you would have done better with N'Golo Kante there. Yeah, of course. But the other side of it, and what he gives you, Jorginho, in terms of his possession stuff, not so much in this game, but in general, over the 38-game season, and I still believe that with this manager, that's the way to go. And you're right, there can be a hybrid. You know, N'Golo Kante can slide back and be defensive with him. So it's just very interesting. And I just think, you know, against the team that you would think at home that they could catch, that would be a problem, it wasn't. That's what makes it very, very interesting to me. Against Wolves, it was a problem. Against Tottenham Hotspur, it was a problem, losing 3-1 at Wembley Stadium. But it's not a common problem. And in the game where I thought we might really sit, we didn't. Maybe that's due to City's football that allows Chelsea to sit back behind the ball. But in terms of the midfield conundrum, if people wanted to say it is, I don't believe it is. And I believe with this coach, with his style, it's the way to go. And N'Golo Kante, by the way, could get better and better at getting forward and scoring. I think we saw, was it last weekend, Rob, where he stole the ball and ran forward and assisted. Time he's run forward and scored a goal. I mean, he's got an incredible engine. Why not use it to get up and down the field in a team that possesses the ball? If the team is a defensive team, he uses that energy to protect and to close down, and it's amazing. But if the team's playing a different way, use it in a different way. Use it vertically.
Yeah.
Get up and down. And that side of things, it was very interesting. The other interesting thing, Rob, is that both teams didn't play a recognised striker. So, you know, kind of this false nine situation with Eden Hazard being preferred to Olivier Giroud, who started the game on the bench, with Willian and Pedro. Now, do you think, Rob, that I think we know that Giroud and Morata, they seem to be struggling to really feel that they're the main man and do
there's
well
no
enough
real
to be the main
there's
man.
There's no real confidence in
is
either,
this the future
honest,
for this
it?
Season? Is it the future of this system?
I think it's the future for some games. I'm not sure it's every game. I think maybe against lesser teams where Chelsea feel they'll have more possession and maybe create more chances, you can play one of those two. But I just think in a bigger game, I mean, we spoke about it. We have our pre-game chat on a Thursday and Friday, and we spoke about it. And we started to just say, wonder if he might go a false nine and bring something. Because the one thing you do know in Eden Hazard is you've got the quality. If you can get balls into his feet, he'll affect defenders in different ways. He might not have the physicality of a centre-forward in some of the build-up play, but he brings you something extra, something different, a different danger. I just feel as though that would be a tough call to say, you know, from here on in, we're going with Hazard up front. I think it's a great option to have for them. I still think they have to look and whether the January window is going to be a time, usually difficult to get the quality of striker they'd want. Mm. So I think against lesser teams, Giroud or Morata, whoever's scoring goals, whoever's in better form, whoever's looking a bit more confident, horses for courses, you pick one of them. In certain big games, I think it looks like it will be the front three with Eden Hazard as the top of the top of the focus.
You know, you look at the league table now, Rob, and you see Chelsea in fourth spot. And and they played that way against Man City and beat the champions like that. I think when you look at the game, you think, wow, why can't Chelsea do this every week? And it was really interesting. Mauricio Sarri, after the game, was asked about, you know, this performance and I guess why they can't do it every week.
It's very difficult to find great motivations for my team. I don't know why. We have to work on this, and we have to play, I think, all matches with the same level of motivation, with the same level of determination, application. Otherwise, it's a big problem. We know very well that if we want to stay in the top four, we have to fight. But we have to fight in every match. Otherwise, a win like this against a very great team is useless.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it, with Mauricio Sarri. And one of the things I really like about him, Rob, is his honesty. I mean, almost feels a little bit awkward after beating Manchester City, you know, the first team to beat them this season, and talk about that motivation. And maybe he feels it's a good time to get it out there. He's obviously come into the football club, Rob, and he came in late in pre-season, had 3 or 4 months working with a group of players. And it's something he's obviously sensed. It's something in that club that we've kind of identified, we've thought about, but we're not quite sure what goes on behind closed doors. There's something he sees, and I would have sensed, and this is sort of trying to second guess what he's talking about, the days that the players don't train well, don't apply themselves in the same way as maybe he's had it players in the past, or maybe he knows teams that are going to go on and be successful. And it's that bit, because when you talk about ability of players, and I know it's early in his reign and there's probably a little bit more tinkering and players to come, This is a title challenging team. This should be a title challenging team.
I just his words there, Rob. He's absolutely 100% spot on. Mm-hmm. He is, and it is an issue. And it's really difficult. We know there were champions 2 years ago. We know there's champion players in that squad, and it goes back to a conversation I think we had about City and how we think they're going to drive on because they've got younger champions. They've got younger players that still want to improve. They want to achieve things. They want to go and be Champions League champions, etc. I just think at Chelsea they've won a few titles. A lot of these players. I just wonder if the motivation's the same. So as he said there, Mauricio Sarri said it like, you know, he almost said, I don't know how to address this because it is an unusual situation because normally, you know, you want to play week in, week out. You want to win titles, but they've done it. And I don't know whether Rob, over the next kind of couple of windows, there's some movement, but there's such still a very good squad of players. But if they're not motivated to play in week in, week out, and roll their sleeves up, which some of them are just not. They're just not. I mean, the difference in David Luiz, Rob, is incredible. I watched him in the game yesterday, and there was moments when he had to defend. He defended as if his life was on it, depended on it.
Now, why does that happen? And that, you know, a week ago or a couple of weeks ago, he goes flying past the defender, no interest in really defending whatsoever. How does that happen, and how do you address it? Can that be addressed, Rob? Is that something that... Can you really rely on David Luiz? Or is one of those games always going to be in? Is that what you have to put up with, with a challenge?
He was a champion player, Rob. 2 years ago, he had a brilliant season under Conte, Antonio Conte, and he was brilliant throughout. And yet now he's on the little bit of the, you know, I'm an amazing player and super casual. So I would normally say to you, Rob, no, you know what, you can't win championships with players like that. You can't rely on those guys. But they did rely on him, and he was good for a whole season a couple of years ago. Mm. So that's the difficult part for the manager. You know, again, if he feels that there's two or three that he needs to change over to liven up a little bit, that might be the way to go. But it must be frustrating for him and the Chelsea fans. I mean, it's not as though they dominate this game. You know, they were well organized. City controlled the game for large periods, but they did some pretty special things in the areas. The N'Golo Kanté goal was really, really good, and the set piece, which is, you know, set pieces are set pieces, and they end up winning the game 2-0. It's just, you know, that's the thing for him now. He's got a striker issue. Mm. He's got a midfield issue. Well, people think he's got a midfield issue. I don't. He's got a striker issue, and he's got a motivational issue. That's the situation with this football club, and that's what he's got to try and do to get them. I mean, they've only lost a couple of games.
I was going to say, if he gets that right, are they still part of the title race? I mean, they're what, 8 points behind?
It's a lot behind. And you worry that if they're not, if they feel, wow, that's a long way behind those two really good teams, yeah, who cares? Mm. Are they driven, Robbie Earle, to finish in the top four? Is that enough for those champions, champions?
I think as a new manager, that's what Sorry's got to do.
Which could be tough.
But that's his job, isn't it? And at some point, he may have to make calls on players that he's not sure. And it might not be a game about ability and technique and what they do on the pitch. It might be that motivation. He might have to make calls that I'll go for a little less ability, but somebody who I know what I'm going to get every week.
Let's switch over to Manchester City, Rob. Of course, the first defeat of the season.
Yeah.
And why don't we just bring in the thoughts of the manager straight away? Because, it does get people thinking straight away, you know, is this City team going to tumble a little bit now? Mm-hmm. So let's get the thoughts of Pep Guardiola after the match.
There is no favourite between you and Liverpool at the moment.
But we're in December, so of course it's favourite. If you tell me Liverpool can win the Premier League, I would say yes. If you tell me right now in the position Tottenham or Arsenal or Chelsea can win the Premier League, I would say yes. Everybody can win the Premier League. But the people judge what happened last season. Last season, I'm sorry, we were the best. But we'll try it again. We did it so far? Yeah. Yeah, that is my feeling. But, of course, when we lose, I wouldn't like to think, you know, to misunderstand. So an argument when you defeat looks like an excuse. You know, I'm sitting here and I try to tell you what I saw. And what I saw is quite good, what we have done today.
We all have a trait, Rob, don't we? When we lose a game, Pep has his. You can hear it in his voice, can't you? When he's, I wouldn't say unhappy, but he knows that his team haven't quite performed as well as he'd like. He's a little bit disappointed, maybe, in some of the things that happened. I think he's quite honest. I mean, if they dominated our top possession in the first half without necessarily creating as much of the chances that they would like. It leads us down the road in terms of personnel and football and the decision that was made. And starting Raheem Sterling down the centre of the pitch, which he's done a good job there many times, whether he started there or he's moved there as the team changed into a different system. The Aguero, and you know I love this man, purest striker in the Premier League, you know, I'm a line. I thought he's missed. This is one of those games where Sergio Aguero's got a great record against Chelsea over the years, brings something different on a day like Man City were having when all their football isn't quite creating all the chances that they would normally do.
Yeah, I mean, of course, that's the natural thing. I mean, it must be frustrating for the manager to witness Gabriel Jesus at the moment because he started from the bench.
Yeah.
This is, of course, when Aguero's injured, this is when he should be playing and he's not playing because he hasn't played well.
No.
As we know, if Pep isn't happy with the form of one of his players, it doesn't matter who it is, he'll sit him on the bench or leave him out. So that is an issue. I also think, Rob, and Kevin De Bruyne, so we know what a brilliant player he is for this football club. And I remember saying, I think, the beginning of his first injury that, you know what, I think we were asked, our producers asked us, you know, is this going to affect Man City's season? I remember saying, you know what, no, it won't, because they're so good, the rotation, that over a course of 2 or 3 months, you know, they can handle it. But you will miss this guy over a longer period of time. And maybe, just maybe, this is one of those games where, you know, he has done special things in this fixture before, Kevin De Bruyne. And it's when you do miss your best players, when it's tight, when the team are a good team you're playing against and they're well organised, he can do something special. That final pass, the cross with the outside of his foot, the shot from 30 yards, he's a special, special player. And you can keep, you know, we haven't really talked about it till now, but I think, yeah, they're missing him. They're missing him. Mm. He's a star. He's one of the best midfield players on the planet. So, you know, I thought it was a game like, you know what? Yeah, they do need that extra bit of quality. Bernardo Silva's done brilliant, and he's a great little footballer, but he's not a Kevin De Bruyne. Yeah. Well, he isn't at the moment.
Yeah,
and David Silva played again. So it was the two Silvers in midfield. Riyad Mahrez played. So you're going to need your best players, Rob, aren't you, to do great things in a season. Mm. And between Aguero and, particularly for me, Kevin De Bruyne, they need those guys back.
They're difference makers, aren't they? They're why you win
in
titles.
In certain games,
absolutely win titles because of those kind of guys and what they do in those big defining moments of seasons. And, yeah, listen, teams absolutely die for, you know, you look at Chelsea, Rob, and put Sergio Aguero in Chelsea's team.
Yeah.
You're going close.
Yeah.
Because he gets you 20 goals.
Yeah.
And you know, Man City, as much talent as you have all over the pitch, you miss a De Bruyne, you miss an Aguero, in certain games, that's going to cause you a problem.
In terms of the title challenge for these two teams, or I guess for Man City, Rob, has it changed? Is this game defining it anyway? Is it changed your thought on the ability of City to dominate and to go clear of everybody else and be the outstanding team? Anything changing from what you saw on Saturday?
No, the reason I say no is Rob, that when we were asked, you know, are City better than the City team of last season that won the title? And I sort of suggest, but one of my reasons was experience now. This team have been down the road. And sometimes good experiences come out of poor results and defeats. And now the unbeaten record's gone. Don't think it was that big an issue to them.
No.
Dominating the game and not converting the chances or get enough chances in the first half, something they'll work on, and maybe when they get that situation again, apply a different way of getting the job done. Nothing changes, Rob, on one result on one weekend. I still see them as favourite and Liverpool chasing, although at the moment Liverpool sit top of the table.
Yeah, I agree with you, mate. I agree with you. I still think City are favourites for me, but let's move on. Let's move on to Liverpool. And that they're top of the league. They are top of the Premier League right now into December with a very impressive 4-0 victory at Bournemouth. Yeah. What was the most impressive part of this victory for you?
Mo Salah, back to form. I mean, a fit, firing, and maybe is it a centre-forward show, if we talk, you know, a fit and firing Mo Salah, who gets you 25 Premier League goals, can shoot you to a title. Can be a difference, Rob. We've said the rest of Liverpool's team, goalkeeper, defence, combination of midfield, and sometimes it doesn't always look perfect, but it doesn't. I'm not that worried. Those elements, I think, are good enough. If that front three start to find the goals, if Mo Salah starts to become the man he was last season, we are in for a proper title race.
I mean, Roberto Firmino is the next part. Mm. The most important part is Mo Salah.
Correct.
And he's still getting goals. But that on against Bournemouth was, wow, that's Mo Salah. And to be fair, again, system change to Liverpool. There's a lot of talk about it. He went away from the 4-3-3 to try and get more out of Mo Salah. And it looks like it's working. He played, it's the highest player, the number 9, if you like. Mm. Roberto Firmino started again in the number 10 position.
Yep.
Shaqiri on the right. And actually, Naby Keita on the left-hand side of a 4-2-3-1. So that's what he's gone to.
Yeah.
Jurgen Klopp, and it hasn't always looked super slick, but this was a lot better. And Bournemouth, they're missing Callum Wilson, and you know, there will be, I guess, tougher tests out there. But the fact that Mo Salah looked 100% sharp, quick, you know, dynamic, c- composed Lethal in front of goal. That's huge for them. That's huge for them, Rob, because we were waiting for this to happen with the attacking mojo to come back again to go with their improved goalkeeper and defensive situation. Again, that is a big deal for them. Well, they conceded 16 games, 6 goals against. So if those goals start to come and those front players start to catch fire, it could be exciting. And we know what those Liverpool fans are going to be like and what Anfield's going to be like. I just stress that Roberto Firmino could absolutely be the key part now. Can he get back to being a provider, a sort of setter of the energy and the press from higher up? It's a different position right now. I understand that. But they need him and Sadio Mane, Rob, to get all back to their best to drive this and to win the title. But they can absolutely do that if these front three find their top form from now at the end of the season.
And let's not forget, Rob, a 16 game season so far, and Mo Salah, maybe people saying 50% of his productivity, is now top goal scorer in the league with Aubameyang on 10 goals. So if good things are to come from him, and as you talked about Mane and Firmino, and I just want to throw one other into the mix here. Shaqiri, Rob, the more I see him, the more I get impressed, the more I think he may have a bigger role to play, being that if Firmino's form does drop, he is a confident quality operator who can play in a number of those positions. He's interchangeable, whether he's on the right, left, or in that central position. That just brings him another element that they might need to rely on it if one hits a little bit of bad form, one gets an injury. There's good quality to go in and replace it.
I mean, back to the review at the start of the pod, Rob, and us sort of getting into a little bit more tactical side of things. Yeah. A 4-2-3-1 is so different to 4-3-3. It just is. Yeah. It changes everything. It changes everything. In this system, Naby Keita played wide left.
Yeah.
Well, that probably, in an ideal world, is going to be Sadio Mane. So then you've got the four of them in those higher positions with just a Wijnaldum and a Fabinho or Henderson or whoever's going to be in front of a back four. So it's different. So you can enable. It's a different system. It's a different way of playing. I just don't know whether Shaqiri, I guess if this system remains this way, he has got a absolute space on that team on the right-hand side.
Absolutely.
If Salah continues to play as a number nine and Firmino in behind, Sané on the right-hand side. So it could be a brilliant alternate system. It could be the number one system they go to right now. It will depend on performances and results.
Yeah, but competitions, if they're in competitions. Yeah. And obviously they've got a big game against Napoli coming up. Dare I say it, and I think I said it once before, Rob, almost don't be in the Champions League might not be a bad thing for Liverpool. Dare I say it?
I don't think you can say it. I think you
can't. I won't say it then. Nobody's listening. I won't say it.
I just think it's such a... I mean, everybody plays for it, Rob, you know.
It's a massive competition.
And after...
I'm not saying get out of it, but...
I know. But yeah, I know. Everybody knows what you mean. If they don't make it through, they've got to beat Napoli 1-0 or by two or more goals. Or Liverpool win and PSG lose or draw to West Ham Belgrade, which probably isn't going to happen. So it's in their hands. Thing is, Rob, it goes away now until February, doesn't it? The Champions League. It goes away. Knockout stages. They can concentrate on it. So absolutely, Liverpool, get through, you know.
And then worry about it once you're through.
Yeah, I mean, they played a strong team, Rob.
He's got a big squad, hasn't he, as well?
Yeah, but he played a strong team. So you're kind of thought of, there is a priority.
Correct.
There's a priority, the Premier League for Liverpool Football Club, 1,000,000% it is. So that's why it was a strong team and not players rested, as others that we'll go on to talk about did as well. So,
Before we move on this one, mate, a little tip of the hat to James Milner, 500th Premier League appearance. I mean, you'll count on one hand the amount of bad games he's had. I mean, just a servant, played in right fullback position, just does you a good job, versatile, consistent. Talk about motivation. This guy looks like a 21-year-old. With the hunger and the desire. I mean, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
He played right back in this game, just to go on to your flexibility and reliability and consistency of a player. It's funny, we were talking about James Milner in the green room with Alan Shearer.
Yeah.
And I think Alan Shearer played with him at Newcastle United. He was talking about him a little bit, and he said, I think we know this, but he said, you know, he is very, very good at all aspects of the game.
Yeah.
All parts of the game, he's very, very good, but he's not outstandingly superb at one part of it.
Mm.
And that doesn't mean to to put him down in any way. He isn't a fantastic winger. He's not a fantastic striker. He isn't a brilliant central midfield player, holding midfield player. He's not a great number eight box-to-box guy, but he's really good a lot of those positions. He's not a great fullback, but he can play there and he can be really good there. So I think, I mean, that's, I mean, longevity in the game, and particularly at his level, this level, Liverpool, you don't have to be that outstanding at something. But if you can be as consistent as he is, then you can continue to work, continue to play, continue to please your manager, because that's why he's there and that's what he does every week, and get to 500 Premier League games. Wow, that's amazing for James.
I just think, and again, I know you're not belittling, but I think he's a standard bearer, Rob. I think when you have a James Milner in a team, you have a point of reference that you go, look at him.
Yeah.
Look at him.
You might, the way, I bet he trains phenomenally. Well, he obviously does. Yeah. So just the mental strength and that experience is going to be very crucial for Liverpool now.
Will be part of, if they are going to go on and entitle, James Milner will have a part to play on and off the pitch.
Just one thing. One thing you said to me at the FanFest, Rob, about Liverpool fans, I think we were on air, we talked about it just quickly. I think being at top now, I think a euphoria, a slow euphoria building, an excitement around Anfield and Liverpool, I think it's going to help. You're not so sure.
Well, yeah, it's a really good point. I absolutely get where you are, and I absolutely, part of me agrees, but my little concern is as this euphoria grows, we've got a long time for euphoria between now and the end of the season. And Liverpool want this title so much, are so desperate for this team, have been so desperate for this situation. I just hope that it can be contained in the right way and still build up till we get to the end of the season, till we get to March, April and May, and it can just explode then. I just don't want it to encompass this club.
Don't you think that motivationally, it drives the players to work harder.
I would like to think so, Rob, but I am being honest. I'm not sure is the answer. Will this be the thing to kick on now? They're top of the table. Come on, this is the time we go on it and play. In all honesty,
or are they scared of winning?
I'm not sure. Listen, 28 years of not winning a title, and it's not just about the ability. There's a mentality and the pressure that's been on, and we've listened to the slip for Steven Gerrard and all that thing. They've been close. The question I'm asking, and it's a question that no one can answer till we get to the season, can Liverpool be title winners from this position?
Well, we have to wait and see on that. I mean, it's going to be great.
That's part of the fascinating journey now, isn't it?
It is, and that's what made the Fan Fest this Saturday such a good day for results and for the league title now, because it looks like, you know, that we could have a race on our hands. Yeah. Another team, Rob, that will still feel they're in it. They're in third spot right now. Mm-hmm. Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah.
A very good victory, 2-0 away from home at Leicester City.
Yeah.
every weekend's different. Podcast.
I gotta tell you, Spurs are a pundit's nightmare. I mean, please, Spurs, can you just do one or the other? Can you be good or not very good, so we can define you, stick you in the box? And I mean, you never quite know with this team, do you?
Well, but mostly, you know, Rob.
Yeah,
mostly
yeah,
they
true.
Do it.
But,
it's
but
just
then
when
every
you
now
wanna,
then, you, yeah, you're well, waiting for the one that's going to trip you up, aren't you?
Well, I mean, I guess the North London derby with a rejuvenated Arsenal team, you know, it's just the way that they finished that match, losing 4-2, you know, man sent off, and you think, oh, you know, it happens again.
Yeah.
But I got to say, and it wasn't always easy to watch all the games this Saturday, but I tell you what, Dele Alli, Rob, now, it was most of last season that we kept saying, I certainly remember me saying it, maybe you weren't so strong on it, that what's happened to Dele? Like, liven up a little bit. Come on, you come into this team, you come into the Premier League, you look brilliant, and then he's just kind of dropped off. Now, I'm not saying it's connected in any way. We know he's just signed a new extension to his contract. I'll ask you, do you think in modern day footballers, and I'm talking Dele Alli, that if their contract, if they feel they're not earning enough money, or they think they're not getting a fair deal and they should be updated, that it can affect a player's form over a period of time?
It's a really good question. And the honest answer is yeah. My honest answer is yeah, Rob. And I'm not saying you go out thinking, I want to be earning X, Y or Z. It becomes a state of mind of maybe the club aren't looking after me as well as they should. And you just don't quite feel right. And I don't think there's any coincidence. Now he's settled. Now he's probably earning the money he feels he should be and deserves. Yeah. And he's playing his better football. Because it's like anything in life. You know, when you go out on a football pitch, you have to take on whatever personal things that are going on in your life. If you've got a cold or your kids have been awake all week and you haven't slept, no one really cares. You get there to play football. Mm. If your contract situation's up, you can't go out saying to people, I don't feel great today because I haven't talked my contract. You have to go and play. And going and playing, and I'm not necessarily saying it's just about money. Sometimes it's about feeling appreciated at the club but in the right way. Mm. And I think he does feel that now. He's probably earning the money that he feels. He's probably in a better position mentally. And we're getting the Dele we saw. He broke into this Spurs team, and I've said before, brings an element of something different that makes them a better side.
Yeah, I mean, he's a big guy, by the way. He's over 6'2", I think, Rob. He's 6'2", 6'3", Dele Alli. He's 22 years of age. He's got a great engine, and he's, you know, is some of his touches and skills and the balance ability to turn. And I mean, I was really, really impressed with him. And I haven't been, you know, in the middle of last season. And that's a good sign for Spurs. That's a really good sign for Spurs, Rob. We know that Harry Kane, if he stays fit and he's got a very, very good injury record, he's going to get his 25+.
Absolutely.
And we said that Christian Eriksen can add and Dele Alli will add. And Heung-min Son, another player we should talk about, Rob, and Lucas Moura, they look more confident, more able to provide goal scoring support for Harry Kane, so just maybe Spurs can do even better this season. What do you think about Heung-min Son, Rob, and how he's looking at the moment?
He's Spurs' James Milner. Do you know when you just want a performance out of somebody? Mm. You just want somebody to do a job. I mean, but he has got probably a little bit more.
The last few weeks he came back, Rob. He come back from international duty for him. He's a little slow.
Wasn't quite up to speed. And obviously there was talk about him doing national service and all that kind of stuff. And again, I don't know if that affected him. But he's one of them players I'd always have around with. I'd always want in my squad, whether he's on the bench or starting. He gives you a job. He'll chase fullbacks. He works hard. He scores goals. He makes goals. He looks like a great lad to have around the training ground and whatever you want. The interesting thing is, if I was probably picking Spurs' best 11, I'm not sure he'd be in it.
Wow. I think he's in it.
Do you?
Yeah, he's got...
So who isn't?
If you wanted to go with it's difficult because you've got to get Christian Eriksen, you've got Lucas Moura, there is a lot. They got a 4-2-3-1. Harry Kane rested this one. They've got a Champions League game coming up, of course. Lucas Moura played up front. It was Moussa Sissoko who's been playing on the right hand side. Newman Son was on the left hand side. Dele was in the number 10 position. Yeah. So I think Son's got to be in. Sissoko probably pops out for me, but then Eriksen didn't play as well. Where does he play in a two?
Came on, didn't
and
he?
That's why, you know, the system of plays, they are important. There's a lot of people out there that don't think that the tactical side of it and systems is that important, but it is for balance and for getting your attacking players in there. So it is interesting. Spurs, I've got some good options. I think the point is that the others, apart from Harry Kane, are looking good in front of goal. And they can go on and do places. Just think about their Champions League, Rob. So let's get that clear. So they got a massive game on Tuesday. Hence, Harry Kane was rested and started from the bench. He came on midway through the second half. But they go to Barcelona on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And they would advance to the knockout stages if they beat better or equal Inter Milan's result. And they have PSV at home.
Yeah.
So who haven't been the strong team. No, so you think that Spurs have got to go to Barcelona and they've got to win. That's what they need to do.
Yeah. And it's a Barcelona team that played strong team at the weekend.
Yeah.
Messi, couple goals for us. Will they, you know, they're already done. Will they rest? Why would you take a risk of playing so many star players in that game? Nothing much to prove from their point of view. So I think the hope from Spurs is that they don't go as strong, Barcelona. Spurs will be all up, all out for it.
Yeah.
If they can get that important win and stay in the Champions League. I think it's a really big thing for this football club to stay in the Champions League.
And I think the conditions are such that Spurs' form is excellent.
Their top
striker will be rested.
Yeah.
Christian Eriksen was on the bench, will be rested. Dele Alli's in his tip-top form condition. Yeah. Heung-min Son is as well. If Barcelona... And I got a feeling that they're not going to be as up for it as you might expect.
That might be the thing,
you know, playing all their star players in the league the weekend before, you know, it's Tuesday.
Good indication, yeah.
I think that Spurs have got a very, very good chance of going through and beating them. I really do, Rob, because of the situation and because
of
sports
is
for
a
form right
now. If they go with that Spurs intensity, which we know, when they're fit and they're feeling good about themselves and that, they might just, it might be a day where Barcelona almost like, oh, not
it's too much for
that. Yeah, can't be bothered with that. We're through. Let them have this one.
Yeah.
Which is what we're hoping, and obviously the more English clubs we get through in the Champions League, the better for the Premier League. So, yeah, big game for Tottenham on Tuesday. I think all eyes on that. Let's move it forward, Rob, to good days at Old Trafford. I'm going to say it again. Good days at Old Trafford. We haven't had them for a while. I mean, 4-1.
What?
I mean, is he getting it right? Is Jose coming with a late run for the title?
Well, first of all, mate, I mean, it's nice to see Man United trying hard, working hard, you know, with attacking intent, with pressing, with winning the ball, with running around, with, you know, and those front players looking confident. Yeah. And it was a much better performance, Rob, much better. 4-1 victory against Fulham. Yes, Fulham are the bottom side, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. We've seen Man United play really poorly against some bad teams. It's just nice to see them having a go. And doing somewhat like play like we know that they can play with some of the players in the team as well. So Lukaku's back in the team up front.
Yeah.
Rashford started on the left-hand side. And Juan Mata, Rob, I'm telling you now, mate, if you went back and we go back to review our podcast of previous games with Man United, I bet most of the ones that we're kind of very, you know, enthused and happy with him. He's playing. He's a little footballer.
So why is he not fixing him, Rob? Why
he wants more
Jose
physicality, doesn't he? More energy, more legs, and more blimmin' graft.
He does all that, and then they don't play well and draw or lose. And he brings Man Wata in and scores and makes goals, and then he drops him again. And Jose wants to win. He's not silly.
He's talked about heart, hasn't he?
Heart,
and he said, you know what? I need to go and pick teams for heart. And when I pick a team for heart, you know what you lot are probably going to say, I'm going to miss quality. Well, because Juan Mata maybe hasn't got the biggest heart at Manchester United, but he's got the most technical ability in terms of his quality. I mean, his quality won the game. Goal and assist. He links things together. I mean, I just think in a squad of players, Rob, that hasn't got a lot of technical guys, hasn't got your blimmin' De Bruyne's and Silvers and Hazards and everybody else, I think when you've got one, a little guy that can link things together and assist and score for you, you've got to play him. So
you've got to have the ball, haven't you? You've got to dominate, but you've got to have a certain amount of possession to get one match of the ball and get him on playing. And it'd be like putting David Silva in a team, but then you've not got much possession and he's running up and down and marking the opposite midfield player.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, the sort of basis of how you're going to play is affected by those individuals.
Mm. Well, it is. I think what stands out, Rob, isn't it? When you see a United performance like that, that's full of energy, full of effort, full of desire, there's one man that again, is not Jose's favourite at the moment. Paul Pogba, again, didn't start this game. He's on the bench. It's something that will always be asked of him. This is what Jose said after the game, and we'll talk about his response afterwards.
He has to play with the same mentality as the team is playing. Paul can be a fantastic player. He has the potential to be a fantastic player. And against Valencia, he's going to start. And against Valencia, he's going to have a fantastic football game to play and to show everybody how good he is.
It's a good few days for Jose Mourinho, Robbie Musto. He had his agent, I thought, try and drag a bit of power back to the manager, talking about, you know, United are happy with him, he's happy with United and Real Madrid, that job. I thought the 4-1 win was a bit more United looking like themselves with a bit more attacking intent. And then Jose, off the back of it, can sort of put it back onto Paul Pogba and say, this is what we did without you. If you don't want to play, if you don't want to be at your best and play in our team and make us better, then you won't play. But if you want to do that, you will. Which basically means you've got a Champions League game midweek where nothing's at stake now and you're vying for a place against Liverpool at the weekend with no guarantee.
You know what, mate? If this was a, if this is some sort of tennis match between these two, yeah. It's fascinating.
It is
by
a
the
tennis
way.
Match. It's a great fascinating. Way of saying it.
Well, because Paul Pogba comes back from the World Cup as a World Cup winner, and people are saying. Yeah. Well, look what he can do with a different manager and a different team. He feels, or it seems like he's got the upper hand in a power struggle with him and the manager.
First set Pogba.
But then recently, his performances have been so bad, and the criticism of the manager has got to a point with the backing of a lot of journalists and a lot of pundits and ex-players. If they, well, actually. Yeah. It is a disgrace. You can't walk around play like the way he did in the last weekend or whenever it was a couple of weeks ago to get away with it. And it feels now like with this statement, and I mean, it's clever management. It's like, absolutely, you know what? We don't really need to win this game against Valencia. Yeah, so you're going to play Paul, and I'm going to say to the media, let's show everybody, Paul. Show everybody how good you are. There you go. And it does put pressure on Paul Pogba to go out there and to say, ooh, yeah. I think he feels he's a set down, or it's one set all, and he's not sure, you know, in terms of who's got the upper hand at the moment, and it all comes down to those fans in Old Trafford, those fans there. Yeah. Are they gonna boo him when he plays, or are they gonna boo the manager? You know, who is gonna win this final set? We'll see.
Jose wins all. It's one set all at the moment. Jose wins all day long, because if Paul Pogba shows he's a top-class, world-class player, Man United win games, Jose wins. If Paul Pogba doesn't kick a ball, sulks, doesn't show the right attitude, Jose has a right to drop him, and people say, Jose wins.
I'm not sure it's that clear-cut, my friend. If Paul Pogba plays against Valencia, right, and he plays really well, and he sticks that chest out, and he goes past people, and he creates and he scores goals, and then... And he doesn't play in the next game?
Yeah, I'm saying he'll play him then in the next game.
Well, will he?
Well, I think he will.
Who's he going to drop then after that really good performance?
Paul Pogba.
I think there's a way that Paul Pogba plays well. Yeah, but there's a way that he plays well and still the manager, you know, doesn't win games, and it's Paul's fault in some way.
I think he's clever in that, Mourinho. I think you might be slightly doing him a disservice.
No, I'm saying it's not an easy game, set, and match to Jose Mourinho with this story.
I think the way Jose's playing it, and he's very, very clever and very shrewd, is that all the pressure's starting to fall on Paul Pogba. All the eyeballs are going on to Paul Pogba. It's almost like, Paul, you're serving, what you're going to do?
Yeah.
Because it's down to him now to put in a level of performance that's good enough for Manchester United, that shows he's a great player, and United win games.
Yeah. And if he holds his serve and plays well, and United over the next few weeks or even a couple of months, and Paul pours in the team, and the team don't play well, Rob, and they don't win games when Paul's playing well, then Mourinho's he's lost the game again.
He does lose the game, but... Winning with Paul Pogba is a Jose win for me. If Paul Pogba plays poorly, Jose gets kind of what he, if he doesn't fancy him, to say, look, everybody, I'm trying the guy. He's not trying a leg. He's not working hard for us. He's not adding anything to the team. How can I
Are you going to sell him? You're going to sell him then?
In January window.
Wow, that would be a huge... That wouldn't happen. That would not happen. There's no way Paul Pogba is leaving.
Do you think there's a situation where, let's just say it doesn't happen, we go into second half of the season, Paul Pogba is not playing in Manchester United first team for a number of games? You think that's... That won't happen.
Well, if he's not playing for a number of games, that United team isn't going to be shooting up towards that top four. And the end of the season, or even before, the manager's going to go, Paul Pogba's going to remain, and there'll be somebody else to go in there to try and rebuild this thing and get it going again, and Paul Pogba wins. So, there's a lot of scenarios. There's a lot of games to play.
New balls.
It's a five setter for sure.
Just finally, mate, let's talk about Arsenal. Unai Emery, he's continuing to keep that good run going, unbeaten form, and they sit in fifth place, 34 points. Are they in a title race? I mean, we're asking about everybody else. So, I mean, another Torreira late goal, who's becoming very, very important to the football club in the way he plays, in his personality. As you said last week, that image of him sliding down in the corner with his shirt
feels strong.
That's... Is there a new wave of Arsenal player coming through?
Yeah, in terms of the title race, I think when you're eight points behind the top just after 16 games, you can't rule yourself out. Mm. And as Pep Guardiola said, that all these teams, I think he mentioned Arsenal as well, can win the title, and they can. again, you know, we quickly scanned the way it is at the league. And yes. I think at the start of the season, I think it's right now, there's two outstanding teams, and that's Liverpool and Manchester City. But we'll have to wait and see. I think Arsenal, it's obvious the progression that's been made.
Yeah.
But there's still work to do for me. I mean, you know, defensively still, Rob Holding is such a blow for himself. It's really bad. You know, he's got this awful injury, ACL injury. He's playing so well. But that's a blow. That's a real blow, of course, to himself, but the team. And defensively, he's been excellent. So that still worries me when I look at the top four or five teams. They're the team that's conceded the most goals at 20 after 16. So there's plenty of good signs. Lucas Torreira, beautiful little overhead kick, wasn't it?
Yeah,
beautiful little execution from him. It looked like they were going to get frustrated by Huddersfield. Mm-hmm. He scores a goal. The Blimmin' Fan Fest. I think that was the biggest celebration, the biggest cheer. The guy threw
took his top off
and all that. So it was a loud happening this Saturday in New York City in the Fan Fest there. But it's just, I mean, there's so many Arsenal fans that we spoke to in there, Rob, about it, and like, wow, you know, just so excited again after a long time of frustration. But I think title, if this year is going to be out for me, it's not. They're not going to be able to do that. But my goodness, they're going to put up a fight now for a top four. There's a long 22 games to go.
Yeah.
And they're level on points with Chelsea in fourth spot. So they've got a great opportunity, if they can keep it going under this manager, to actually finish in the top four. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Challenge for the top four has got to be a priority for Arsenal. 8 points clear now of Manchester United, so they will want to keep that gap going into the second half of the season. Listen, mate, we have had a great weekend of football. Great brilliant drama, great action, brilliant fan fest. So that's it from us. But we always want to hear from you, our listeners. So go to Apple Podcasts, download the Two Robbies Show, and rate and review the show. But more importantly, tell us what you want to hear from the podcast. You want us to talk about more clubs, less clubs, more about your club? Show us what you want, tell us what you want, and we'll make it happen. And we're without the best responses on our next podcast. So it was good to see Manchester United be Manchester United when the weekend when City suffered their first loss and Liverpool go top of the table. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a title race. I'm Earl, he's Musto, together with the Two Robbies. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.